Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup, deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 120. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow, and joining me once again is soon-to-be father, Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, buddy?
Good. I've got my drill ready, and I'm getting ready to go outside and install some cameras.
Okay, and why is that? Are you afraid?
I got this side project, because I've been reading about all this IoT, like embedded smart things, you know,
yeah,
stuff. And I got these cameras that can read license plates. We've got a lot of packages go missing in the neighborhood. I even got this one camera from this questionable Hong Kong dealer that claims to have AI machine learning and will not only tell me attributes about the people that it picks up, but like their mood. Like, are they annoyed? Are they angry? Are they happy? So it's probably nonsense, but, you know, one last crazy project here.
Great. Fast forward like 3 months, I'll be like, John, how's it going? Well, I found a license plate and I chased the guy down and he shot me.
You know, it's more of just I want to because I can type project. So.
I can't wait. I'm looking forward to the footage on Twitter. All right. Well, John, I know we spend a lot of time talking about data centers and cloud, which, you know, as of today are about 1% virtualized. But today we're going to pivot a little bit. I want to talk about the telco industry, which I heard recently is only about 1% virtualized. And, you know, as the migration towards 5G happens, I'm told that this is going to require a significant amount of a virtualization to make this whole next generation of 5G be a reality. And so I don't know a lot about this area. I'm really glad that we've got the experts on the call today. We've got two gentlemen from the telco business unit at VMware, and we're going to talk about the telco industry and what's happening with 5G. No stranger to the podcast, we've got a guest that's been on before, Mr. Nick Wilson, who's now a VMware employee. So Nick, welcome to VMware and welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks, guys.
And joining us from the VMware telco BU for the first time is Mr. Brian Beal. Brian, how's it going, man?
It's going good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us today. So you guys have been focusing on, you know, CSPs or communication service providers. You guys are in a much different space than us vSAN guys. So I'm really curious, why don't we start, before we even get into the technology and all that, why don't you just, starting with you, Brian, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do at VMware as it pertains to telco?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am, as you mentioned, in the telco business unit. My official title is Senior Director of Strategy and Innovation. Effectively, what that means is I lead most of our engagements with service providers and telcos, both large and small, throughout the Americas and in the EMEA region as well. And as part of that, I also manage our solution architect team in the region. So we are the technical resources that go into a service provider and really help them identify their migration to what we call the telco cloud. So it actually goes beyond NFV now to include things like edge, public cloud resources that telcos are now using to run their networks, and of course their NFV resources as well. So it encompasses many things.
Nice.
What I love about anything that involves telco is there seems to be an infinite number of acronyms and buzzwords. I mean, not that we storage and virtualization people don't already have our own, but you've mentioned NFV, network function virtualization. So that's like virtual firewalls or routers or load balancers, right?
Yeah, so good question. So a virtual network function can be many, many things. And it did start with, as you just described, the real early ones were virtual firewalls and virtual routers and kind of the things that were easy to virtualize. But really where VMware is building a name for ourselves now is virtualizing the core network functions, actually what the telcos are using to run their network. So when you pick up a phone and you know, make a call on your iPhone, it's actually converting that to data, voice over LTE, it's known as, and then it's routed through the core carrier network, and then your call terminates. And actually, all of those functions, all the steps that take place are now being virtualized. It's a big transition. That used to be big, expensive, purpose-built hardware, but now it's running more commonly virtualized on x86. So it's moving beyond those edge functions to really the core mission critical applications that a telco needs to run their services.
Well, and that stuff used to be run on what you'd call like what, class 2, class 3 switches, these big iron things that, you know, you'd have these massive data centers, and now that's all going to like SIP or H.232 or so forth.
Yeah, I mean, I equate it to mainframes. These are big room filling boxes from big companies like Ericsson, Nokia, Alcatel-Lucent, that did, you know, one thing, you know, did the call processing. And now it did it very, very well. And it was ultra highly reliable and all the things that a telco expected. And that's why it stayed, you know, on that purpose-built hardware for so long. But now those same companies, Ericsson, Nokia, et cetera, are moving the functions that formerly only existed in hardware to run in an application, in a VM, on a x86 appliance, and increasingly even moving into containers, actually moving those functions into containers now as well.
And this is just really cool because previously, I mean, in a modern data center, you know, we'd maybe try to shoot for 3 nines or 4 nines. I think, you know, most of the public clouds on a single availability zone, they won't give you better than 3 nines. And if you think about the public switch telephone network, we had, you know, these central offices that were these single facility all our copper went through that were expected to deliver 6, 7 nines, you know, be able to survive atomic war on a diesel generator for 2 weeks.
All the nines.
So, yeah. And so it's almost like x86 is kind of growing up now, and we displaced the mainframes, but these are some of those final holdouts of compute or special purpose ruled.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. So what we shoot for in our group and what we talk about, and actually we even start to back this up now with SL. We have some new support tiers that VMware is offering just to carriers. We shoot for 5 nines of reliability. That's the goal on the infrastructure layer, on the virtual infrastructure layer, I should say. So that's our goal. That's what we shoot for. The good news is that we've never violated our SLA. So when we have telcos that have carrier grade support, we actually back that up with an SLA where we get credits if we miss our SLA. And in the 4 years of this business unit having that, we've never once had to issue a credit. So we have a pretty good track record of reliability. And, you know, one of the things that we're seeing is in that old world of dedicated hardware, you had that one part that did that one thing. And if that part broke, it was like, oh crap, what do we do? Let's go. Some places are still buying those on eBay because they're old.
The big line cards. I remember my line cards.
Yeah, the line cards.
And my Eon switch.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just.
And those are still out there. Yeah. And those are still out there, increasingly hard to maintain. But when you're running in a field of x86 compute, and by the way, you can do things like vMotion and use other VMware products like HCX to move these workloads around. If an entire data center goes down, if an entire, you know, rack goes down, a switch, a router, whatever, we have the ability to move the entire carrier's network somewhere else and run it on another x86 environment. And even increasingly now, they're asking us for the ability to move it into AWS, believe it or not. So, you know, it makes that dependent on any single piece of hardware or any single piece of equipment less important.
Well, I like that because, I mean, previously, the amount of engineering that went into the central offices is just impressive. Nick lives here with me in Houston. And, you know, here in Houston, you know, you can spot a central office, right? It's the ugliest building you have ever seen. It is this brick monolith that looks like, I don't know, 1984, the book Personified.
Isn't that every government building?
No windows. Like, it looks like, okay, that looks like the most depressing place I could ever work. One of them, there was one, I think it was off Old Spanish Show. I remember asking about it. I was like, why is it designed this way? They're like, oh, if a bomb goes off inside it, it'll redirect the blast this direction. Like, and the fact that we're saying, you know what, let's overlay this to where we can, you know, fail over to multiple clouds. We can distribute the application. That really changes, you know, how you do the design, and hopefully we'll get fewer ugly buildings. So.
Yeah, I can say that the COs need to exist for the foreseeable future because all that copper that still exists out there, that last mile, has to aggregate somewhere. That's the way a telco explained it to me. We have to keep these big ugly buildings because we still have all this copper, and the copper physically in the, you know, on the underground or up in the poles has to end somewhere.
And that place.
But what they're doing is, Well, what they're doing is they're turning them into mini data centers, and they want to use them for things like CDN, you know, turn it into a caching engine, the store, whatever the Netflix show is, right? So I don't have to backhaul all this traffic on my WAN. Or now they're even talking about doing gaming, running gaming servers for Fortnite or other companies out at the CO. So kids in the neighborhood are playing with really low latency. Wow. So they're trying to be more agile and creative with what they use that CO for. So it's not just, as you very accurately described, a big switch sitting in a concrete building. that did one thing, right?
Well, and I remember just from my days working in a call center, moving from those big, you know, the Tataran that you could throw out of a plane and would take small arms fire to, you know, a one-use server that replaced it. Now those telcos and those central offices, they have all this extra space. And I do remember TW Telecom leasing some colo space from there. It was very clear that building had been built in the 70s and we were just reusing that space in that regard. So that's, they're actually turning these liabilities that are infrastructure into cash cows is pretty cool.
Yeah, now that's turning into, with edge compute, very valuable real estate that sits really close to the user. And it's becoming something now that they can sell or make money off of.
Well, that, that flips the traditional paradigm to where it was the backhaul carriers who kind of made the money and the last mile guys paid them for transit, to where the last mile guys are actually renting out their infrastructure to provide these really low latency services. Now, you mentioned they still have to have those central offices for now because of that copper. How much, you know, where are we with 5G? Is that going to replace the copper? Is copper dead? When are we giving up on the what's called the public switch telephone network? Where are we at there in that transition?
Yeah, because 5G is virtualized. So that's that should be a game changer. Is that something that VMware is looking at?
Yeah, I mean, every day I'm in multiple meetings talking about 5G. It really is driving the bulk of our engagements today. You know, Pat, our CEO, has a great quote. He says there are going to be two types of 5G deployments, those which are virtualized and those which will fail. and we really believe that, right? Because 5G just demands new services and new functions out of the network. It also puts a lot more resources at the edge. 5G is a very edge dependent type of application. So it involves a lot more boxes, for lack of a better term, right? Antennas and base stations sitting out closer to the customer. But make no mistake about it, the wireless carriers are coming after the landline carriers with 5G. They want the internet at your house. They want the fixed wireless internet into the commercial market, and then they want to add on services on top of it. And think about it, by not having to have that copper running to every house, every office, every building, they can just stick up a base station, right? Stick up an antenna and blast 1,000 houses. It's a lot less expensive to manage that infrastructure. So yeah, you're going to see T-Mobile, Sprint, Verizon, AT&T going after the Charter, Comcast, Cox, CenturyLink of the world. I think that's pretty clear at this point.
Well, right. It's fun seeing this in my own neighborhood because I actually have a 5G Verizon experimental nanometer wave tower around the corner. And then immediately, I don't know, about 50 feet away, there's a Crown Castle, you know, half cab just parked in the middle of the median in an LTE advanced 2 gigahertz T-Mobile tower. And the idea that that little cabinet could start holding, you know, Hulu streams or whatever it is, or containerized applications, that's pretty crazy versus the usual 30 to 40 milliseconds to get anywhere meaningful.
Yeah, we actually have one customer here in the US that wants to get the sub 1 millisecond latency at the far edge for gaming and CDN specifically. And they've come to us asking how we would architect that. It's a container use case. It leverages Heptio, bare metal, Kubernetes. But we've got customers that now in this telco space, they've got very different needs. They need, you know, ultra low latency at the edge, but in the core, it looks very different. It's VMs. You know, they don't need sub 1 millisecond latency. They need ease of management of a very huge infrastructure. And they want a common vendor that can do all of those things. So, you know, it's getting into this awesome time right now where we're getting to experiment with, you know, containers running with VM, sub 1 millisecond latency use cases, all managed through what we call the single through line or that common thread, which is our telco cloud offering.
And so I understand that VMware brings in, what VMware brings to the table is NFV. Is that the, because I know obviously we don't own 5G, but how does VMware make 5G more accessible to these telco providers?
Yeah, so that's an important question. So we fit down in what ETSI, right, which is another, I'm just going to keep throwing acronyms at you, but the European Telecom Standards Institute. We sit down on what they call the NFVI layer. Okay. So NFV, as you rightfully explained, is dependent on this set of virtualized infrastructure. So from a VMware perspective, it includes virtualizing the compute with vSphere, virtualizing the storage with vSAN, virtualizing the network with NSX, and then it includes a VIM. And we have two options, vCloud Director, which is what telcos embraced early on. And we have over 80 telcos using vCloud Director. Okay. But we also use VMware Integrated OpenStack, VIO, becoming much more popular, quite frankly, because there's a lot of telcos out there that have tried to build their own OpenStack or tried to get Red Hat to wedge in to fit this use case. They're now 3, 4, 5 years in and it doesn't work. We can kind of swoop in with VIO leverage all the same APIs that they depend on, and get to market much, much more quickly. So that's where we sit. And then we use VR Ops, and we have some of the day two operations tools embedded in there as well. But that's where we sit. We're down at that plumbing layer. You know, we aren't the 5G VNF vendor. We're down there in the infrastructure layer.
That's really funny. I thought OpenStack was supposed to kill VMware a few years back, didn't it?
Oh, that was all the press in 2013, 2014. in fact, I remember it was a meeting I had with Nick back around that time where he was looking at OpenStack and then for an enterprise use case and ended up hard pivoting to SDDC. How'd that turn out, Nick?
Well, internally, we had our own product. I came from a very large telco here in the US, and we had spent probably just shy of $1 billion of an investment in OpenStack and, you know, hundreds and hundreds of OpenStack engineers. And we were working and it was like management by objective. And so it was budget by objective. And so we never hit any of our marks internally. And, you know, customers were chomping at the bit and said, let's just grab the stuff off the shelf because it works.
Yeah, I can't tell you when I started in this group 3 years ago, a little over, I think I was like the fourth or fifth person brought in, and it was all kind of greenfield. And yeah, we were going up against either we're going to build it ourselves, we're going to hire a whole bunch of engineers, and we're going to become a software company, which is, you know, tough to do. But that was the path they were going to take. Or they were going to do some version of Red Hat or maybe Mirantis, Canonical, and so forth. But now we're to the point where I would say probably 80% of the projects I personally work on is replacing failed OpenStack attempts. It's probably 80% of what we do now. Oh, wow. And there are two customers. There are the ones that say OpenStack's a bad word. They fired everybody involved. Don't even think about mentioning it here. We'll use vCloud Director because we are not touching OpenStack again. That's one group. We have plenty of those. Then we have the other ones that say, well, you know, we've got all these network functions and vendors that all this work we've done that depend on these APIs, these OpenStack APIs, and we don't want to start over. And since Bio, our OpenStack distribution, is a fully compliant distribution, leverages all the same APIs, we can come in. And to your point, we're the fast time to market. We're the easy, fast, get it stood up and stable choice. So we have the customers that fall into both groups. And of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention we have a carrier-specific version of OpenStack. So VMware actually has two OpenStack distributions, little known tidbit. We've got one that was built first that was really enterprise-focused because that was VMware's historic focus, right? Then we decided, well, you know, the needs of NFV, the needs of a carrier are pretty different than an enterprise. So we bifurcated it and actually built what we call Bio Carrier Edition. So we built one just for telcos. And so the carriers like that. They appreciate we've added some features in there that are real specific to what they need, usually for that NFV core network workload.
Yeah, and I've had some conversations with the telco. When I first ran into your business unit, it was some requests. They were working on certifying some voice inspection, some security appliances. So it sounds like y'all are really deep into that ecosystem of, you know, working with all those partners.
Yeah, we made that decision early on that we were going to build our own certification lab for the VNF partners, for the telco vendors. So we have over 130 VNF certified that go across every telco use case you can think of, from virtual EPC, which is the core of their network, IMS and Volte, which is what processes voice traffic. So these are the mission critical VNFs. These are the Ericsson, Nokias of the world, all the way out to the virtual firewalls and virtual routers and SD-WAN, of course. Yeah, and we focused on building our own lab so that the customers wouldn't have to be the guinea pig. We certify that these VNFs work on our stack, and we show which versions of which product. And then, of course, we back that up with our carrier-grade support, the support tier that we built just for the needs of the telcos as well.
What is it like to support a telco customer versus a regular VMware customer? Is that the same thing, or is it slightly different considering the volume or the size?
Yeah, you know, there's less of them. I mean, in the U.S., I'm bouncing between, what, 6-7 companies in the entire country. It's a little more than that, but you get the idea. It's a fewer number of customers. They are very risk averse. Typically, they test and retest. And I mean, this is their business. I mean, if you can't make a call, if the 911 call doesn't process, it's a problem, right? And that's what we're getting into is, again, the core network, mission critical VNF. So they're fewer, they're large. and the sales cycles are long. They're 2 years typically plus. So it's a huge investment from VMware. I mean, our cost of sale is huge for these, right? We invest a lot of resources, a lot of travel. We do proof of concepts for our customers. But, you know, we're dealing with 20,000 servers, 50,000 servers. We have a customer in India with over 300 million users. There are 300 million subscribers running on our platform. Reliance Jio, a telco there. So we're dealing at a scale the likes of which you just typically don't get in an enterprise.
Well, I mean,
so it's fun.
One thing I remember kind of some initial discussions around telco is just think about your management interfaces that your typical enterprise admin uses today, where they're managing hundreds or maybe 2,000 VMs. Those interfaces don't work.
They don't scale, right?
When you have 100,000 instances of something. The fact that, you know, from an R&D perspective, we have to reimagine just for how the management, how the monitoring, how the NOC tooling works on this stuff, because everything you've ever used, the tools aren't designed for this scale. And even to the UI UX level, they don't work.
Yeah. I mean, if you think of a typical enterprise, and I mean, I hate to say that, every company's different, but, you know, your IT decision makers that are building the service or making decisions on a vendor or a technology stack are usually the same people that have to run it. So they really care, you know, is this going to be easy? Because I mean, I'm not only building this out, I'm going to have to run it once it's built. Telcos are totally different. They typically have an engineering team that builds it, and then they literally hand the keys off to an ops team that now has to run it. And the ops team, if they look at it and say, whoa, 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 this is way too hard. I'd have to hire 50 more people to run this thing, then it goes back and they start over. And that happened a lot in that homegrown OpenStack world because they were getting handed these snowflakes. It was one, you know, OpenStack distro to run this VNF, maybe my Cisco EPC, but then I need totally different drivers. I need a different Neutron driver. I need all these different drivers to run this. So now I have a totally different OpenStack. So what you end up with, if you're a big telco, is 50, 60 different OpenStack environments that you now hand off to your ops team to manage. And they just, right, they say, no, I'm not doing this. So it died. Right. And we come in with this common platform story. Vodafone, our largest customer, I think, in terms of number of VNFs, has over 300 different VNFs running on one version of vSphere, one version of NSX, one version of vSAN, one version of vCloud Director, right, with over 300 different VNFs. So, you know, those are the things that make the operations people happy. You know, it's that ease of management is important.
Nick, you're over there shaking your head. I feel like you've experienced some of those pains yourself.
I mean, when we were talking about it, I think it was three years ago, we basically had this OpenStack put together and we were like, hey, there's 65,000 different ways we can put these pieces together right now. And everyone in the room starts arguing with each other and then they leave the room and nobody's on the same page. And you just end up with all of these different, because someone wanted this little function that works a little bit differently over here. And so you end up, absolutely.
Everybody's a snowflake.
Well, I like this holy grail of this common platform because, okay, we got your data center today, which you previously had a storage silo compute, and then those network yahoos had all their weird boxes in the rack. But you also had that, you know, if it was a common, like an office building or something, there was a telecom room that had a million little weird boxes that were bolted to the wall. You'd have an Adtran NetVanta here doing a SIP to, you know, T1 handoff, or you'd have all these different things. And I met with a carrier in Southeast Asia, and the big thing they asked for was, we want a magic box that we can run every single thing that you see in that closet that you guys don't even properly air condition that has all these weird boxes. We want actually maybe two boxes, so if one fails, it fails over, and that's it. And so this idea of this common platform, I don't think... until you go in that weird room in your office, you don't necessarily appreciate how fragmented this industry is and how much how awesome this is, bringing a common platform to kind of bring some order to this chaos.
Oh, yeah. And you gave us what the infrastructure is, right? So the compute on vSphere, the storage on vSAN, and the networking on NSX. And then, of course, vCloud Director or our own version of OpenStack. But as far as operations concerned, I mean, are we also standardizing the analytics and all of the maintenance and all that stuff as well?
Yeah, great question. So we also, in most of our deployments, have vRealize Operations, Log Insight, and Network Insight. They go into almost every deployment. Again, because when we go in, we talk one story to the engineering team, and then we got to pivot and meet with the operations team. When the operations team see that those three tools are included and what they can do with those tools with their environment, For NFB, the light bulb usually goes off with the operations team. So we have two stories, right? We're talking to engineering over here and we're talking to operations, and we have to make sure we're relevant to both of those groups. So yeah, we include those. And VMware also acquired recently another product called Smarts, which is a service assurance product. It came out of EMC. So where our operations tools kind of, they don't fall short, but you know, they do up to this point really well, but they're not an end-to-end telco service assurance product. We saw that as a kind of a gap that we wanted to fill to round out the portfolio, and we acquired the Smarts platform out of EMC. Now that gives us the ability to do end-to-end analytics, predictive maintenance, capacity planning for an entire use case or an entire stack, like let's say a voice over LTE stack for an IMS stack for a telco, which we couldn't do before. So what I love about VMware is we're all in on telcos. If we have a gap, Shekar, who's the GM of the telco group and also EVP and runs M&A, they'll go buy it. They'll go buy a company to fill the gap. I think it shows the commitment that we're all in for telcos. Oh, yeah. This isn't marketing fluff. This isn't slideware. We're putting real meat behind our offering, including how we develop the products, enhancements that were made to vSphere to improve vSwitch performance, you know, things that you just don't think about for an enterprise, but we had to care about. VMware's all in. I mean, from product M&A to hiring the people on our team, we're serious about this market.
So I have some kind of pivot here, just some more general questions about what's going on in the wonderful world of telco and wireless. Obviously, you know, the traditional TDM signaling, voice calls, G711, the codec that was invented in, what, 1978 or something?
Yeah. It's 40 plus years old.
That really needed to die. Where are we? Because I've seen in Europe, you know, if they're getting what called HD voice or high fidelity. Where are we at in seeing being able to have truly high fidelity, like our Zoom calls here, getting that baked into the telecom network?
Yeah, good question. You know, it's funny how Europe often kind of leads that charge. They always seem to be the early adopters of these new technologies. But I think you're going to see that coming with 5G. I think that's finally going to enable the service providers to start to layer on, you know, more value add features, whether it's HD calling or, I mean, we have some that want to do virtual reality based, you know, headset services over the network. We actually look at it in kind of three categories. We look at the real high throughput gaming, like the gigabit speeds to the handset. We look at that. We look at the ARM use case or IoT use case. Carriers want to be able to manage sensors and a high number of devices, ARM devices coming on the network. And then the third leg of the stool is the super low latency, ultra high reliability use case, robotic surgery, autonomous vehicles, things like that. So the service providers are going to see 5G as a way to, quite frankly, make more money. They're going to be able to layer on, you mentioned a few of them, but new technologies that are going to bring new services and hopefully ways for them to make more money.
It sounds like 5G is really going to change the way CSPs evolve.
Yeah. They're just going to be able to do a lot more with their network. There's no doubt about it. And that's where the virtualization comes in, assuming it's virtualized, assuming it's not just plunked down this big box and only does one thing. But we're pretty sure that's not going to happen.
Now, can someone explain to me what network slicing is and where this fits into this picture?
Yeah, network slicing, that's a great question. So that gives the service provider, and I'll use the service provider example, the ability to basically create highway lanes for a specific use case. So for example, they might create a different service tier for running IoT. You know, what does your toaster really need in terms of latency and reliability on the network? And you might be able to sell that slice off at a lower cost than, let's say, a slice that's really important, an autonomous car slice, a robotic surgery slice. So they'll be able to offer maybe SLAs to an end user based on that use case, and they'll slice the network up to do it. And they might even run it on different hardware. I mean, we have some customers that say, look, I'm going to build really cheap boxes over here to run my IoT environment for certain things. But over here, maybe for a CDN or something that needs, I'm going to use better disk and, you know, faster drives and better silicon and faster NICs. And slicing is going to give you the ability to divide up those resources based on the use case and customer demand.
Sounds so like QoS.
Is the high level overview.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but QoS, I mean, you had DSCP tags where you basically had, you know, expedited. Yeah. Do I want expedited forwarding? Do I want basic? You really were just prioritizing kind of one packet over another. This sounds like even like all the way to the compute layer, the storage layer, This is a you know, having policies that you'll tag and it follows it around, so to speak.
Yeah, affinity and anti-affinity rules, things like that, that you can do now with network slicing. Yeah, and that's coming down the pike rapidly. We're investing a lot in network slicing for 5G.
Cool. Now, I guess one final thing. I've heard some bits about something called Shaken and Stir. You know, we've got this problem today with voice calls of how the caller ID works. It's based on these old protocols, S7 and whatnot. Where are we at on getting rid of robocalls or getting some authenticate, bringing some security and things?
Did you follow my Twitter? So, yeah, I have a pretty passionate stance on this robocall. It actually is starting to cause real headaches. So actually in my spare time, I'm actually a volunteer with the Highway Patrol here in Ohio. And their dispatch centers are getting bombarded with robocalls to the point where they can't take emergency calls. We had an issue with a hospital system. I think it was Tufts that couldn't take calls because they were bombarded with robocalls. So it's a real problem. And I think the only way you're ever going to fix it is at the network layer. You're going to have to treat it the way we did with spam. You're going to have to start doing blacklists. There's even somebody who talked about doing a certificate authority for inbound calls onto a network, signed certificates, where you're validating where that inbound traffic comes from, whether it's SIP traffic, POTS, you know, whatever it may be, to the point where we're validating users as they come on a network, as a call is even set up and processed on a network. I think until we actually look at it as a core network layer function, not a dumb app on your iPhone that's going to work 10% of the time and doesn't work to a landline user, until we get it and manage it at the network layer, we're never going to fix it because laws and fines don't matter when it's scammers overseas, right? They don't care about that.
So short of drone strikes in the short term, I don't have too much recourse there.
No. Go download RoboKiller and do the paid version. And
I mean, my that's
John, it. maybe you should get your camera set up first at the house before you start drone strikes.
You know, it's infuriating, bad, but you brought up a good point about email and like treating it like that, because if we think about email was this protocol that was developed in this wide open era of course everyone's not going to be a dick on this network, you know, and unfortunately the internet evolved a lot farther than I think anyone who wrote the SMTP spec intended, but we've fought back. Spam is not this, you know, overwhelming thing, and I can't just spoof anyone like you could back in the day.
Yeah, FCC laws need to catch up too, because phone companies operate right now on this idea of implicit authorization, meaning if I pick up a phone and dial a number, I have implicit authority to ring that phone 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, regardless of who I am. And maybe that needs to change, right? Maybe you need the ability to not allow, you know, anyone or any SIP traffic or any bad actor access to the network. But believe it or not, there are laws that actually protect that now, where it's hard to block somebody or kick someone off of a network or not allow them to call one of your customers. So believe it or not, regulations actually need to kind of allow the carriers to deploy the technology to stop the problem.
Yeah. So how long before everybody is on 5G? I mean, when am I going to be holding a 5G device in my hand?
Yeah, so I think 5G is going to go after fixed wireless first. That's the easiest nut to crack is landline internet, and they're kind of going after there first. But of course, there's field trials now for 5G to the handset. I think you're going to start to see more nationwide adoption probably late Q3, Q4, 2020. 2021, it'll be picking up more. And then the carriers are going to have to decide really how good the handset, what do they get? You know, what are you really going to need at your handset? Because I've done trials, right? 1.5 gigs, right? Speed test to my phone.
What are you doing? Processing all the,
right, exactly. Processing all those packets. It's simple physics. It uses battery every time you unpack a packet. So it just destroys the battery. Your battery life on your phone is going to be terrible. It's going to be a bad experience. So really to a phone, it's going to be a benefit of maybe lower latency. Yeah, you'll get some faster speeds. I think the biggest benefit to 5G that we're all going to love is the increased capacity. Just they can cram more users in an area than they can right now with LTE. But we're probably still 2 years away from that, you know, at a national level.
Sweet. Very cool. Well, man, this has been pretty interesting.
This is like lightning around here. So, you know,
is there going to be anything around NFV at VMworld this year?
Yeah. Yeah. You are going to see it. We talk about it, you know, in the booth, and we use VMworld also as a chance to do breakout sessions on NFV. We'll bring in customers and partners. So there will be sessions about 5G more broadly about the ecosystem of partners that we have, what customers are doing with VMware. And then it's also just a great time to meet with customers. I remember my first VMworld for NIV a few years ago, no telco customers came. They were like, what, VMware? You know, that's the IT guys show. We're the network people. We don't go.
Yeah,
now we can't, and as of even last year, we can't make all the meetings that we have. It's really taken off that much. So you're going to start to see more and more of the buzz about this at VMworld.
I like it. I met Nick when Nick was a telco provider. I met him at VMworld, so I know some of them come.
Yeah, nice.
The funny thing is we do all of this stuff in the telco space, and we're developing all these partnerships and doing all this business. But when you look at their internal IT orgs, we still get the Heisman as far as, oh, you're not a network company. It's like, hey, we're going to run your core network at some point. Yeah. We're doing networking, I promise. Just come in and see.
Yeah, you'd be surprised how many tier one large global telcos we're running. I mean, literally, we're processing calls. I mean, we are running the network core. And then, yeah, you'll go over to IT and they'll have no clue that we're over there. They couldn't be more opposite.
They're
completely separated. And then, last point, we actually have some companies, believe it or not, that have merged IT and their telco networks onto one stack. We have some Telia, Oridu, and some others that they are running their network applications, IT, on one set of infrastructure, one VMware stack. That's pretty cutting edge, and they're not all going to do that, but some do. Great economies of scale.
As an IT guy, just the idea of getting a carrier-grade SLA for my regular boring applications. This sounds kind of bougie. This sounds fun.
To be fair, we don't do that. We only will do carrier-grade support for the network function. We wrap up a nice little box around what we'll give that give that to, and it has to be
but
they'll
be
on mission critical support.
At least it's designed for it, though, is my point.
Like, it is
I'm not having to go do my own design. I already assume that people who run phone networks are going to get me all the nines and then some, so just being able to piggyback off the architecture work there and consolidate that, and makes a lot of sense.
Oh, absolutely.
Sweet. All right. Well, listen, we're at the 30-minute mark here, so I'm going to cut this one. Gentlemen, we will see you at VMworld. I'll be leaving some links to some great articles that I've already read about this great technology. And, man, I'm looking forward to seeing it at VMworld, John. We got to add this to our schedule. All right, gentlemen, anything else before we take off?
No, thanks for the time today. Appreciate it.
All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go, and so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Brian and Nick for geeking out on telco today. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now.
Enough of this jibber jabber.